Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Bet Amud Aleph, seven lines down. Just as a reminder of what we're doing right now, the Gemara is discussing the position of Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah makes a statement about an androgynos, and the question is, what does he mean when he makes that statement about the androgynos? Does he mean that an androgynos is a zachar vadai, or does he believe that an androgynos is a safek? Zachar Safek Nikeva. That turns out to be a machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan thinks that Rabbi Yossi's statement means that an androgynos is a Vadai Zachar, and therefore when it comes to his marriage to his wife, the wife is entitled to eat Shuma Deoraita, as well as Chazev Vishok Deoraita. On the other hand, Reish Lakish believes that Rabbi Yossi's statement is only that he's a Safek androgynos. And since he's a Safek, then he can only be entitled to Truma Midrabanan. But when it comes to Chazek V'Shok, which is Deoraita, as well as Truma Deoraita, she will not be entitled to that because he's only a Safek. He's not a Vadai Androgynos. So that is the nature of the Machloket that we're looking at right now. Then the Gemara looked at Reish Lakish's premise for the fact that Truma Bizman Hazeh is Midrabanan, from the fact that we have a brayta that says eagle be'igulim is batel. And so Reish Lakish's premise is the reason it is batel is because it's a din derabanan. Because truma bizman hazeh is derabanan. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan says that's just not the case. Truma bizman hazeh is deoraita, but it's still batel. Now, why is it batel? Because their machloket revolves around this issue of what is considered to be a davar chashuv. What is considered to be a significant item? Reish Lakish, in the Shita of Rabbi Meir, as we saw the Mishnah yesterday from Orla, says that items that are kol shedar kol limanot, anything that is sometimes enumerated or quantified, that is chashuv and it would not be batel. Therefore, igul b'igulim, which qualifies as something that would be a davar chashuv, is only batel because it's truma b'zman hazeh d'rabanan. Had it been d'oraita, there is no way that we would have allowed it to be batel. Now, there are exceptions to that rule, as we're going to see in a second. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says, no, the only thing that's considered to be a davar chashuv is et shedar kol limanot. Only things that are only sold by quantity, that are never sold in any other manner, they are chashuv. Igulim are sometimes sold be'umdina, be'mishkal, other ways, and therefore they're not considered to be chashuv. And therefore, even at doraita level, it is batel. Rabbi Yochanan's proof is from the braita of chatichot, which is when you have chatichot of Chatat, Temeah, they got mixed up with Torah. There we see they are batel, and yet we're talking about a din d'oraita for sure. And they're batel. Why? Because they're not considered to be chashuv enough, and therefore they are batel. What does Reish Lakish do with that braita? Reish Lakish says that that braita is talking about nimucha. It's talking about a case where it dissolved, it became a liquid. And since it's now a liquid, you can't call it a davar chashuv anymore, because it's lost any significance or delineation separately. It's all mixed together now, and that's why it's batel in the braita of chatichot. The second half of the braita of chatichot says that it, even according to the Tanakama, there's a machloka Tanakama in Rabbi Yehuda, even according to the Tanakama, the second half of that braita says it's not batel. When you have chulin tehorin together with chatat tehora, it's not batel. Rashi says the reason that it's not batel there is because it's a hefseid muat. Since it's a hefseid muat, and you have a solution by selling it to the Kohen, there we say to you, look, if it's a din d'oraita, and it's a hefseid muat, just sell it to the Kohen, and we're not going to allow you to be mevatelet lichatchila, or we're going to allow you to be mevatelet, instead of just selling it off to the Kohen for hefseid muat. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, no, that it's premised on the fact that you could serve it to guests. And since you could serve it to guests, it has significance or chashivut, because there you're talking about chulin. Chulin Tehorim, together with Chatat Tehora. If it's Batel, you could serve it to guests. Since you could serve it to guests, it's something that is Chashuv, takes on a significance, and that's why it's not Batel. So there we have a layout of what we've seen so far. Now the Gemara wants to understand, within Reish Lakish's opinion, why is there a difference between the Reisha and the Seifa? According to Rabbi Yochanan, we understand the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. According to Rashi, because in the Reisha it's Batel, because things that are doraita are batel. In the Seifa, it's not batel because it's either according to Rashi, a hefseid muat, and you can just sell it off, or according to Tosafot, because it's something that you can be mitchaved lifnei orchim with that piece of meat, and therefore it's not batel. So we have Rabbi Yochanan's explanation. But according to Reish Lakish, who says that the bright is talking about nimocha, where it's totally mixed together, what's the difference between the reisha and the seifa? So that's what we're trying to determine now, and that's what the Gemara is about to explain. In addition to that, we mentioned yesterday that even though there's a case of hefseg muat, we say go ahead and sell it off, because that's better than making it batel. That's only true over here when we're talking about an ishtu d'oraita. But when it's completely d'rabanan, like igulim, by igulim, where not only is it a din d'rabanan according to Reish Lakish, because true of bizman is d'rabanan, there's also another aspect, which is it's peirot ha'ilan. Peirot ha'ilan are only chayav in truma mid'rabanan. So over there, where the entire issue is d'rabanan, even with the hefsed muat, we let you be mevatalit, and we don't insist that you sell it to the kohen. But over here, by chatichot, we're talking about a level d'oraita. Over there, we say, please sell it off to the kohen in a hefsed muat. So that is Rabbi Yochanan Shita, but Reish Lakish, how does he differentiate between the Reisha and the Seifa? And that's what we're up to here. Reish Lakish, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. What's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa? Amar of Shisha Breid Ravidi, Reisha Betumat Mashkim De Rabbanan, Seifa De Oraita. That the Reisha is talking about where the Tuma is only Tuma Mi De Rabbanan. And since it is Tuma De Rabbanan, therefore, we are mevatelet, because then we're dealing with a rabbinic issue. On the other hand, where the Seifa talks about the Oraita, there we're going to say, sell it off for a hefsed muat, sell it to the Kohen, we prefer you do that, rather than be mevatel, something that is mi de Oraita. And the Seifa is a din de Oraita, because it's asur lezarim. Since it's asur lezarim, then you have a din de Oraita, and we'd rather you sell that off to the Kohen, than be mevatelet, and say that we don't worry about it. So that'll be the difference for him. The ratio is talking about tumat mashkin de rabbanan. The seifa is talking about a din de oraita, which is that it's a sur lizarim. Gemara says now, aval tumat sheretz mai. So now you're saying to me, what's the differential? The differential is tumat de rabbanan in the ratio, and the seifa going to the ratio is talking about zarim, which is de oraita. So Gemara says, well then, tumat sheretz, which is a tumat de oraita, would have been the din. Lo taleh. It would not be batel. So Gemara says, Adatani seifa v'chaticha shel chatat tehora. Shnitarva b'meya chatichot shel chulin tehorot. Lo taleh. In that case of the seifa, where we said it's one piece of chatat tehora that's mixed up with 100 chulin that are tehorin, that it will not be batel. Niflog v'litnei b'dido. Again, you could have done a much finer distinction. Instead of creating a case in the ratio and then a totally separate case in the seifa, let us say it this way. Bamed varim amurim. When is this said? Betumat mashkim. That's true only betumat derabanan. Aval betumat sheretz? Lo. By betumat sheretz, it would not be true. You could have made that simple distinction, which is batel when it's tumat derabanan, not batel when it's tumat deoraita. Instead of jumping tracks and starting to talk about zarim and other things that are deoraita, just do it within tumat. Say tumat derabanan, tumat deoraita, and you would have had an easy solution to the problem. Gemara again says the same answer it said at the end of yesterday's daf that we said, Torot v'torot adiflei. Torot v'torot, we like that as a better scenario because it's not intuitive. It's less intuitive, as Rashi said yesterday, Leshmin and Afagav d'shtem Torot. Even though they're both Torah, v'shayach b'hu bitula tfei, and it's more likely that you be mevatel them, nevertheless we say, don't be mevatel them, and take the hefsed muat, and sell it off to the Kohen. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot says that Torah b'Torot adifle da'avu pishen yisurai lezarim. Even though the Easter is only for zarim, it's not for everybody. Afilu ochi, it's chamira. It's so chamor that we say don't use bitul, sell it off to the kohen. So those are two ways to learn this. Torot b'Torot adifle. So Rabbi Shisha Breid Ravidi's solution to Reish Lakish's understanding of a chatichot is to say that the Reish is talking about tuma derabanan. And therefore it's batel, and that does not undermine Rabbi Reish Lakish's position in two manners. One is things that are kol shadar kol limanot is considered to be chashuv, something that is sometimes sold quantitatively is chashuv and not batel. Here it's not a problem because nimucha, it's all dissolved, it's all a liquid now. Number two is, Reish Lakish's shita is that when you're dealing with the doraita, we do not say bitul with regards to these items, when it's a dover chashuv like that. Again, the answer is nimucha. But also the fact that it's only talking about Tuma Derabanan. which also makes it a lot easier to deal with.
It also means, both Rashi and Tosafot point this out, that the Rabbonon that argue on Reb Yehuda, who says, min v'mino enu batel, they only argue on him when it's a din derabbonon, where it's tumat mashkim derabbanan. But where it's tumat doraita, this Tana would agree with Reb Yehuda and say that min v'mino enu batel, because the fact that they set it up by nimucha, which is a liquid, and it's tumat derabbanan, that's why it's batel. Reb Yehuda obviously disagrees, even derabbanan. But the Tana Kama only says it's batel when it's derabbanan. But had it been doraita, they'd have said it's not batel, because min b'mino ain't no batel. On the other hand, why the Sefer is not batel? The Sefer is not batel because they were talking about a doraita problem. A doraita problem of zarut. True, if you had a doraita problem of tumah, it would have been the same din. But the writer opted to talk about zarut or a din doraita of torot b'torot because that's a bigger chiddush. Since it's a bigger chiddush, that's the way that they went. This is all according to the girsa that we have, that the question here was on Rish Lakish. There are other girsaot brought in the Rishonim that suggest questions actually, Mishna, Reish, and Seifa is on Rabbi Yochanan. According to Rish Lakish, you can differentiate between the Reish and the Seifa because their case of the Reish is minimocha, and the Seifa is where you have whole pieces. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that there are whole pieces in the Reish and the Seifa, Mishna. And the answer of the Gemara is now answering that question on Rabbi Yochanan. Or there's another alternate girsa which says, Mishna Raisha, Mishna Seifa, without any attribution of the question. And the question is actually both on Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, trying to understand what the difference is between the Reisha where it's Batel and the Seifa where it's not Batel. So that's Vishesha Brei the Ravidi's answer. Then we move on to the next possibility of how to answer on behalf of Reish Lakish, and that's Rabbah. Rabbah Amar Isurlav. Seifa Isur Koret. Rabbah says that the Reish is talking about an Isur Lav, where the problem is only a Lav, whereas the Seifa is talking about an Isur Koret. The difference between the Reish and the Seifa is, in the Reish, the Basar itself is Tamei. So when the Kodashim, when the Basar is Tamei, there's only a Lav for someone who's Tahor to eat the Basar Kodashim that is Tamei. On the other hand, the Seifa is talking about where it's Tahor, and if a person eats it B'tumat HaGuf, that is an Isur Karet. So depending where the Tumah is, it depends on the outcome of the restriction. If the meat is Tameh and the individual is Tahor, then it's only an Isur Lav. On the other hand, if the person is Tameh, Tumat HaGuf, but the Basar is Tahor, then you have an Isur Karet. So now the distinction between the Reish and the Seifa is the level of Isur that we're dealing with. When there is a Isur Lav, over there we're going to say to you, Talet, that it is Batel. When it's a Isur Karet, it's much more chamur, we're going to say, not batel. Now again, all of these assume, and I mentioned this at the end of yesterday's shir, that with regards to bitul, bitul only works so far. I mean that even when we say something is batel, and clearly there is an excess of one item over the other, nevertheless, the item that is being nit batel still has some manifestation in this grouping or this tarovet. And therefore, we're dealing with this problem. Where it's an Isur Lav, we say, let it go, and let it be Batel. In a case where there's an Isur Karet, we're going to say that the Bitul is not strong enough to wipe out the Isur entirely, and therefore, if you came to Tumat HaGuf and ate this, even though it's all Chulin now, because the Tarovet was majority Chulin, 101 Chulin, it should have been Batel, and it's as if the Isur is not there. No, we're saying that the Isur Karet makes it as if it still has significance, it still has significance, therefore, we're going to say, don't do that, don't let it be Batel in that case. Where it says, "V'ha Rabba Hu Damar Kol Bidoraita Loshna Isur Lav Loshna Isur Karet." Didn't Rabba say that there's no difference when it comes to these items to bitul? Makes no difference what the gradation of the Isur is, as long as it's Doraita, it all has one din. The din is it's Doraita. Either means yes or no. There's no gradations. It's only a binary thing. It's either it works or it doesn't work. Bitul over here. Where it says Kasho. That is a problem, according to Rabbah, the Shittato, to explain Reish Lakish in that manner. The second thing you have to discuss here about Rabbah's position is, does Rabbah still accept the original Gemara's position that we're talking about Nimocha? Because Rav Sheshi Brei Ravidi accepted that we're still talking about Nimocha, just that the first case is a case of Derabbanan, Tuma Derabbanan, the second case of Parabim of Zarut, which is an Isur De'oraita. But here, Rabbah, who says that it has to do with the gradations of the Lav,
does he still have this issue of Nimocha or not? Rashi brings here two possibilities. In the first possibility, he says that it's Olam b'Nimocha, that we're always talking about Nimocha still. And he's just telling you that the gradations here are gradations of Tuma. Is it Tumat Basar or Tumat Aguf? And that's the only question here. Lishna Achrina, Rashi brings a second position, which is the Olam b'Shalom Nimocha. It's a case where it did not dissolve. The eagles, and then what are you going to do? If it didn't dissolve, now you have significant pieces over here. So how is this different than eagle? Eagleim were also significant pieces over there. Reish Lakish said they were batil. So hainu taima de Reish Lakish bidoraita lo batil. The cave in the truma lazar bemita kikore damyo. So that's the reason by eagle. By eagle, why then would it not be batil? If according to Reish Lakish, even on a doraita level, things are batil when it's an isur lav or it's a lesser form of isur, then by Igulim of Truma, it also should be Batel, even if it was Doraita, and then Reish Lakish is proof that Truma of Izmanazeh is gone. The answer is that by Igulim, it's also a severe type of Isur Doraita. It's Mita Bidei Shemayim. So Mita Bidei Shemayim is going to be like Karet, and therefore, just like over here, when he says Karet, no Bito, so to over there, when it comes to Mita Bidei Shemayim, no Bito if it was Doraita. The fact that over there we said Igul B'Igulim is Batel shows you it must be Drabanan and not Deoraita, and that's his proof that Truma Bezmanazeh is the Rabbanan. Over here, it's a case of Chatichot and Karet, so that is Isur Deoraita, severe Isur Deoraita, no Bito. It was just an Isur Lav, like the ratio of Chatichot, then it would be Batel. So that's the explanation. Right, but that we said, Rashi said before, that even though the Tainim are Peirot that are only Chayav and Truma Mid Rabbanan, nevertheless, if it was a time period when it was Deoraita, it would have been patterned after the Doraita, and it would still have been Asur, even though it's Nisur de Rabbanan. Rabbanan always use a Doraita paradigm to set there. Ke'in Doraita Tikkun. And therefore, if there is a Nisur Doraita, there are others that suggest otherwise and say that this is according to the opinion that says, Peirot, Hailan Ar, Chayav Doraita, in Trumot de Masrot. That's either according to the Rambam, who says it's straight out, or the Raivad, who says it's only true by the Shivat Aminim. But there are opinions like that within the Gemara and in the Rishonim, and maybe that's according to that opinion. So either way, you deal with the eagle is going to be separate than this din. All right, now we have a third attempt to explain Reish Lakish's difference. Rav Ashi Amar, Seifa Mishum Davish Dover Shiyeshlo Matirim. The Seifa is a case where it's something that is mutar. Now again, Rashi says Rav Ashi's clearly talking about Nimocha. Again, he's saying that it dissolved. It's a liquid here, so you don't have the problem of a piece that is significant, like by Igulim. Over here, it's not significant because it dissolved. And why, in the first case, is it Batel? In the second case, in the bright side, it's not Batel? Because the second case is Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirim. Behold, Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirim, Afilo Elf Lo Batel. Even in 1,000 is not Batel, because we say to you, just wait. It's worth waiting because we don't have to use Bitol here if you just wait. And again, this goes back to what we're discussing. Bitol is not necessarily a change in the dynamic over here, which says that everything here is considered to be chulin, but rather bitul is just a psak halacha, which says, since this is the situation, this is how we deal with it. But the isur still exists within that tarovet. So here in a case where I have a choice of exercising bitul versus waiting, I'd just rather you wait and not exercise the bitul problem.
That's the way that Rashi explains Dovar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, basically differentiating between mitziyut, which is that the isur is still extant, versus Psak Halacha, which says that when we view something, we say to you that based on the fact that it's a robe, that we're mevatel it. But in the case where we have an option to wait and just have it be behet there, then we'd rather not invoke the Psak because of the mitziyut of the Isur that is there. On the other hand, the Ran, who we mentioned yesterday, who says the premise of Bittel has to do with opposites or contrasts that are mevatel each other, the Ran says that Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin is not batel, because it's not enough of a contrast. For the Ran, a contrast can be contrast in taste, or it can be a contrast in Iser Veheter. Over here, we have a contrast of Iser Veheter. The Iser side of it here is not a real Iser. Since an Iser that will eventually turn to Heter, it's not a strong enough Iser to be in contrast with the Heter that's here, and therefore the Bittul process does not work. So this is around the Shitato, who we mentioned yesterday, that the focus on Bittul is this idea of contrast. And Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin lacks that contrast, and therefore it's not Batel. So according to the Ran, he could be arguing on Rashi and saying that Bittul works in such a form that Bittul is the new Mitziyut. That's what happens. But here, the contrasting items are not enough of a contrast to generate Bittul. But if we have Bittul, It's as if the Isser is gone, the Gamri. It's not just the Pesach Halacha, it's the Mitziyut, and everything now is Heter after Bittul. Gemara says, V'ah Ravashi Bedutahi. Ravashi's whole thing is a joke. Laman, who is it Dover Sheish Lo Matirin for? Se'ila Kohen, Mishra Shari. For a Kohen, it's Muta right away. Because it's a Chatat that was Tohora, and it is Chulin that's Tohorim. The Kohen can eat either piece independently, and he can eat them together. There's nothing that's a Dover Sheish Lo Matirin. Ila Yisrael. If it's Yisrael, Olam Asur. It doesn't matter. It's going to be Asur either way. A Chatat Torah, whether it's alone or mixed together, is Asur. Eldav Rashi Bedutai. Ravashi is kind of a joke. Now, what David said is true, which is that if you read Davar Sheish Lo Matirim, if you think about the concept, which is, if I have a better option than doing Bittul, I'd rather opt for that. So that might be what Ravashi's saying. What you're saying then is true, and that will actually be the answer that we gave before, which is we're talking about, it's a Hefseid Muat, because only the Kohen can eat it, and therefore that's a better option than doing Bittul. But then in essence, he's same as the other answers before. It's not a differentiated answer that Ravashi's giving by saying it's Davar Sheish Lo Matirim. In the essence, if you use the concept of Davar Sheish Lo Matirim, then you're back to like what Rashi said before, that you're talking about Hefseid Muat, and therefore I'd rather do that than be Mevatel something, because I'd rather exercise other options than doing Bittul. Now, Gemara goes back and goes to the origins of this whole scenario here, which is, before we say that Reish Lakish believes Truman Bizman says Dirabonon, and Rabbi Yochanan argued on him, indicating that he believes that Truma Bizman Hazeh is De'oraita. And that's what the Gemara wants to challenge now. V'savar Rabbi Yochanan Truma Bizman Hazeh De'oraita? Does Rabbi Yochanan really believe that Truma Bizman Hazeh is De'oraita? V'atanyo! V'abraita. Shtei kubot, achat shel chulin v'achat shel truma. You have these two baskets, one full of chulin, one full of truma. V'ilus nehem shtei sa'in. And in front of them you have these two measurements of a sa'ah, a basket or something that holds a sa'ah. Achat shel chulin v'achat shel truma. One has truma in it, one has chulin in it. Menaflu elu b'toch elu. And then they got mixed together. The sa'in and the kupot got mixed together. One sa'ah with one kupa, one sa'ah with one kupa. Hari elu mutarim. Those are mutar. Why? Shani omer, truma l'toch truma nafla. V'chulin b'toch chulin naflu. I simply say that the truma fell into the truma, and the chulin fell into the chulin. V'am Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish qualifies this and says, V'hu shrabu chulin ala truma. That's as long as the chulin is greater than the truma. Meaning that when the truma fell into it, no matter which basket it fell into, it is the minority. Therefore, mimon of shach, I'm okay. Mimon of shach, either the chulin fell into the chulin and the truma fell into the truma. Even if the truma fell into the chulin is greater than truma and it's batel. So, Reish Lakish, who already thinks that truma bizman is derabanan, so already dealing with a rabbinic level issue anyway, then on top of that, he says that the chulin exceeds the truma. So over there, no question that it should be said like this, that chulin the toch chulin, truma the toch truma, and we just assume everything is fine.
But he's assuming rove.
Right. Reish Lakish does not qualify and say that the rove over here means 100-1, which is the typical bittul of truma. He's just saying that it has to be rove. But since it's only truma bizman hazeh, which is the rabbanan, maybe rove suffices over here, and he doesn't say 100-1. You could read that when he says rove over here, it means 100-1, although that's not necessarily implied in his words.
So therefore, the combination of rove, which suffices midoraita, and the tliya of shani omer are mitztaref to say that it is mutar in this case, even with rove, and we don't require the 100-1 that we normally require with regards to truma. And that's generally the way that shani omer works. It's invoking, as Tosafot says here, chazaka, that the chulin has a chezkat chulin and the truma has a chezkat truma. In order to undermine that chazakah, we need something stronger than just a safek. And therefore, that's why I say she'ani omer. If I combine ani omer, which is basically maintaining the status quo through chazaka, with something else, according to Reish Lakish, that something else is rove, I am willing, in the case of safek, to say that the chazaka remains static. Rabbi Yochanan amar, afo bishalo rabu chulim ala truma. Even though there's no more chulin than truma. Bishlam ala Reish Lakish kasavar bidrabana nami ribu yehu dibi'inan. Even at a rabbinic level, we still demand rove in order to be mevatel something. We don't say automatically that the chulin fell into the chulin and the truma fell into the truma. We want to be sure that the truma is not a problem here. How do I make sure the truma is not a problem here? Either it fell into the truma or the chulin is greater than it, so it doesn't matter. Elo Rabbi Yochanan kasha. According to Rabbi Yochanan, why is it that you say ani omer? According to Rabbi Yochanan here, it's clear that we're dealing with a din derabanan. Because if it's not a din derabanan, how could Rabbi Yochanan claim shani omer? Because there's no rove over here. how can I automatically assume that the truma fell into truma, chulin fell into chulin? If you're talking about an isur d'oraita, there's no way you're going to take a risk and say, oh yeah, the truma fell into the truma, the chulin fell into the chulin. If you're talking about truma d'rabbanan, then you can start talking about risks taking because it's only d'rabbanan. So the Gemara says, hamani rabbanan hi. This is according to the shita of the rabbanan. Va'ana the amrik Rabbi Yossi. Our Mishnah, where he's discussing the problem in our Mishnah, that's according to Rabbi Yossi. So what he's saying is that Rabbi Yossi believes that Truma Bizman Azeh is the Oraita, whereas the Rabbonon believe Truma Bizman Azeh is the Rabbonon. So what Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting over here is that this Tosefta from Trumot is according to the Rabbonon who believe Truma Bizman Azeh is the Rabbonon. Before, when we were discussing about Igulim, and I said it was a Din d'Oraita, that's within the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. That's not in the Shita of the Rabbonon. The Tanya, how do I know that Rabbi Yossi says this? Tanya B'Seder Olam, Asher Yeshua Botecha V'Rishta, that your fathers have inherited. It says the word Yerusha twice. Yerusha Rishuna Ushnia Yesh Lehem. There is a first Yerusha. There is a second Yerusha. Shlishit Ein Lehem. They will not be a third Yerusha. So, Ba'amar Rabbi Yochanan Mantana Seder Olam. Who is the author of Seder Olam? Rabbi Yossi. This time Rabbi Yossi is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafto. Is the author of Seder Olam. And you see in Seder Olam that the second Yerusha, which means in the time of Ezra, is permanent. And therefore the Kedusha remains permanently. If that's the case, then Truma Bizvan Azeh is the Oraita because the Truma was never Nitbatel. The Rabbeinu Chananel, Tosfot brings from the Rabbeinu Chananel, Yerusha Rishonah is Avraham. Yerusha Shniah is Yoshua. Tosfot rejects that explanation. And like most of the Rishonim explains that Yerusha Rishonah means Yoshua. And Yerusha Shniah means Ezra. And that means that when Yoshua's Kedusha was Nitbatel at the destruction or the Churban HaBayit and the Churban HaAretz, the Galut HaAretz, the Kedusha went away. When they came back in the time of Ezra, that reestablished Kedusha at HaMikdash and Kedusha at HaAretz, and that remains permanently. And even after the Churban HaBayit or the Churban or Galut HaAretz, that Kedusha remains, and it's still extant today, and that means that Truma is d'oraita today because Kedusha at HaAretz is still intact. That is the belief of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta based on the Seder Olam, who he is the author of Seder Olam Rabbah. Now, whether Rabbi Yochanan actually subscribes to Rabbi Yossi's position or not is somewhat subject to Machloket Rishonim. Is it whether that is Rabbi Yossi's opinion, v'lei lo svirle, and I don't hold like it? Or is that Rabbi Yossi's opinion, and I also hold like Rabbi Yossi? That's the Rabbanan, this is Rabbi Yossi, and I pass on Rabbi Yossi. It's not clear from here. It's a question of whether Rabbi Yochanan says, when Anna, Savik Rabbi Yossi, does he mean I'm explaining Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah this way? Or does it mean that I actually hold like Rabbi Yossi? It's unclear here. Right now, the other thing is that Tosfot over here brings up a bifurcation of the din that most people ascribe to the Rambam, but Tosfot throughout Shas has this idea embedded in him as well, which is he starts to ask, well, it seems like the Kedusha Rishona was permanent. So how come over here you're saying that it wasn't permanent, Kedusha Shniah is permanent? So he bifurcates the din between the Mikdash and the Aretz. And it says, as far as the Mikdash is concerned, the Kedusha HaMikdash was permanent from Kedusha Rishona, whereas the Aretz was only Kadosh from the Kedusha Shniah was permanent. And therefore the din will be different between Mikdash and Aretz. Okay, then most of the Rishonim look at them as being lined up. And therefore whatever happened with the Mikdash happens with the Aretz and vice versa. Over here, Tosafot suggests this Chiddush that you could separate the dinim and say that by Mikdash it was permanent from Rishona, and for Aretz, it was only permanent from Shniah, and this bright of Seder Olam is only talking about Aretz. It's not talking about Mikdash. Mar says, the Savar Rabbi Yochanan bidrabanan lo bin ribuya. That is Rabbi Yochanan. Based on this, you're saying that when Rabbi Yochanan explained the Tosefta before, that it was according to the Rabbanan, and I say, Ani Omer, that the Chulin fell into the Chulin, Truma fell into Truma, that was because it was the Rabbanan. So now the Gemara says, do we assume now that Rabbi Yochanan holds in Dinei Drabonon that there's no requirement for a Rov? That's none. Mikvish yeshbo arba'im sana mikuvanot. It has exactly 40 sa in it. Natansa, vinatalsa, kasher. He puts in a sa'ah of non-kosher water into the mikveh. Well, since the mikveh is 40 sa'ah, when pustle water goes into it, it's batel. So that's okay. Then you pull out a sa'ah. That's fine also because you still have a kosher mikveh remaining. And you put in the first pustle sa'ah before you remove the other one. If you did it in reverse, it wouldn't work. Because then you only have 39 sa'ah and you're completing the mikveh with pasul ma'im. That doesn't work. So over here, you put in the water first, it's batel, and take out the other water, fine.
With regards to what that was pasul that fell into the mikveh over here, there's actually a machloket rishonim. Rashi and Tosafot seem to indicate that it was not only ma'im shu'uvim, which is a dinder abonon of psul, but even me perot, which actually have a problem me d'oraita. And if that is the case, then the whole premise of the question is somewhat suspect, because then we're talking about a d'oraita level problem rather than a rabbinic level problem. The way that Tosafot deals with that is to either say that the me perot here are not full me perot, they're rather temed, which is only an issue d'rabbanan, or to say that me d'oraita, we invoke the principle of kama kama batil, which is that as the items fall in, they become batel as if they don't exist. It's only me d'rabbanan here that we worry about them after they've fallen in order to avoid that problem of d'oraita. But then it raises another issue, which Tosafot hints at here, which is actually a machlokes Rashi and Tosafot in the Gemara in Avodah Zorah, is when we invoke the principle of kama kama batil, can we do that endlessly, which seems to be the approach of Rashi in Avodah Zorah, or is it limited by rov? And that's what Tosafot says over here, that it's limited by rov, like we see in our Mishnah from Mikvahot, that it's limited, that only say gama kama batil until you reach the level of rov. This is Rabbi Yochanan, ad rubo, only up to rov. You can only do this up to the 50% mark, but if the rov now becomes this pus of water, then you can't say that this is a kosher mikveh anymore. My lab, dinishta er rubo, it must be that you leave behind a rov, which means that there's at least a row with the original 40 sa'ah that was there, that's kasher. So you could do this 19 times without having a problem. But on the 20th time already, you'd start to have a problem. So Gemara says, well, the lo nishko ruba, the other way around. Not that you have to leave a row, but you can't take out a row. So it means that you could do it 20 times, you couldn't do it a 21st time. So that means you don't need a row. As long as it's 50-50, it's okay. Right, so Tosafot talks about your question. Bibai teima, shani hocha. Meaning that over there it's different, because Shani Omer gives you another out. Besides the fact that it's not a robe, but there's also Shani Omer. I can assign the Truma to the Truma, the Chulin to the Chulin, and I have a way to explain it where it won't create an Iser. But the Mikveh, I don't have that option. I can't explain it as not being an Iser, because you put in a Sa'ad, take out a Sa'ad, put in a Sa'ad, then you're going to run into a problem at some point in time. Now, implied in the fact that the Gemara gives the second answer as being Shani Omer, says that the first answer that they were working with, or the first approach they were working with, did not involve Shani Omer. Based on that, Rashi says that the first approach of Rabbi Yochanan is that when it comes to Dinei D'Rabbanan, we don't require Shani Omer, and we don't require Rov. We don't require anything. Any two mixtures that involve Dinei D'Rabbanan, they're automatically Batel. Now, obviously, that's a very difficult approach. Rashi says it over here. But where would we find such a thing that in Dinei D'Rabbanan everything just goes away? It's batel automatically. Therefore, most of the Rishonim, in the way that I explained the Gemara, is that both parts are invoking the principle of a Shani Omer. The question is whether they have to have something mimitztaref joined together with it. According to the first answer, Shani Omer works without any issue or any consideration of rov. And that's what the Gemara is asking about. How could it be that Rabbi Yochanan really believes Shani Omer works without rov? We see by Mikvaot that Rabbi Yochanan demands a din of rov. The answer in the end is no, he doesn't require rov. He says even in a case of 50-50, it is batel. But in a case where it's 50-50, we still invoke the principle of Shani Omer. Or according to Rashi, we'll need at least a 1-to-1 ratio in order to be batel without any other considerations. Then, when the Gemara moves on to the next answer, which is V'baitema Shani Omer, the Fi Rashi, it makes a lot of sense, because now before, the Gemara was not dealing with Shani Omer, because by Mikveh, Mikveh is talking about liquids that mix completely. How can you invoke the principle of Shani Omer over there? Shani Omer is only relevant when you're talking about Truma, and you're talking about Kupot, or distinct items. And so that's what Rashi says. The first way the Gemara was thinking was that Rabbi Yochanan needed nothing in order for it to be batel midrabanan. They challenged that from the Mishnah in Mikvaot, which is dealing on a rabbinic level, and yet still seems to require rov. The conclusion was, not rov, but at least 50-50. 50-50 suffices in order to take care of it. The second answer says no, that the difference between the din of Mikvaot and the din of Kupot is that the din of Kupot is working with Shani Omer, and therefore Shani Omer is why I don't require a rov. But by Mikveh, where Shani Omer is not relevant, then I would say that you need a rov. On the other hand, the Ritva, who explains that Shani Omer is relevant in both cases, in the first case, the Gemara is questioning Shani Omer doesn't need a tziruf of anything else. The Gemara, well, what about Mikveh, where I have Shani Omer, that she'otosa ashenatan hu natal. And if that's the case, then why does Rabbi Yochanan require a rove? The answer in the end is it doesn't require a rove. He requires just 50-50 with a she'ani omer. Then the second answer of the Gemara that says she'ani omer means that she'ani omer is really relevant by the truma, but the she'ani omer by the mikveh is a much weaker form of she'ani omer, probably for the same reasons that Rashi says before. And therefore, the she'ani omer by the mikveh requires a rove to be a bit siruf. But we can't just use she'ani omer by itself, as opposed to truma, which does not require a rove. She'ani omer is sufficient over there to be invoked in order to make it that in a din d'rabbanan, we say that the truma fell into the truma and the chulin fell into the chulin. Okay, now tznan, androgynous, our mishnah. Androgynous, no say. So therefore, that's a problem for Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, who says that Rabbi Yossi thinks that this is only b'diavad, not the chatchila. When he says androgynous, no say, sounds like he can get married, no problem. He's treated like a zachar and gets married. So tnei imnasa. Say that if he got married, then it's tofes and you have to get a get, meaning misafek, he has to get a get. Gemara says, v'ha no seik tani. One of the few times the Gemara says, wait a minute, that's not what it says. You know, amen the Mishnah to say this. The Gemara says, that's just not what the Mishnah says. Mishnah says, no seik.
Nice try.
Ulitameich. And then according to your reasoning, my aval lo nisa. So Reish Lakish retorts and says, well, then what are you going to do about the second half? It says, no seik, velo nisa. Lo nisa is a loshon b'diavad. So now you have an inconsistency, the Elamai Nisa Diavad, just like Nisa is only Diavad that he shouldn't get married. No say Nami Diavad. So to no say, that's, even though it's written as a Lashon Chatchila, it really means Diavad because you won't have a parallel here. No say and Nisa should be the same thing, which is they're both B'Diavad. So the Gemara says, Amrei Lo, no say Lachatchila Mashmo, Avalo Nisa Diavad, Nami Lo. So the Gemara says, no, it's going to work the other way around, which is no say is Lachatchila, which is that you can, he's like a zachar vadai, and therefore he can get married the chatchila. And lo nisa is even diviavad, he's not married because he's a zachar. So if he acts like a nekeva, it doesn't work even bidiavad, because he's a vadai zachar. And this is very supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's explanation, not of Reish Lakish's explanation. This is a diuk in the Mishnah that's against Reish Lakish. The Gemara says, v'hamigtani seifa Rabbi Eliezer omer androgynos chayvin alav skila kizachar. So the last part of the Mishnah says that, and androgynous is chayev skila before mishkav zachar because we treat him like a vadai zachar. Bichal the Tanakama svuka misvekalei makes it sound like the people until then, the Tanaim in there, are all talking about safek because Rabbi Elazar is taking a position. If Rabbi Yossi really holds it's a zachar vadai, then why does Rabbi Elazar come along and say, oh yeah, he is a zachar vadai? No, that's exactly what Rabbi Yossi said. But if Rabbi Elazar is saying zachar vadai, it means that Rabbi Yossi must be talking about a zachar safek. That's supportive of Reish Lakish, not like Rabbi Yochanan. Gemara says, no, ben the mar, mishat pshitole, that both of them agree that it's a zachar vadai. The only question is, iki ben ayu, skila mishnei mekomot. When you have this bia, mishkav zachar, with this androgynous, he's a vadai zachar. So you're chayav for mishkav zachar. How did he have mishkav zachar? Did he have mishkav zachar acting like a zachar? Or did he have mishkav zachar acting like a nekeva? Everybody agrees that he's a zachar vadai. The question is, did he act in a homosexual manner, which is that he used, or he acted, either active or passive. In either case, he did it like he would do Mishkav Zachar in a regular Zachar. Or, did he use his Makom Nikevot? Which is something that nobody, that's not an option for a Zachar normally, but only an option that androgynous can have. That's the difference between, that's an afkamina. Mar sever chayvin alav skila mishnei mikomot. One of them holds that even mi Makom Nikevot, that it is considered to be a Mishkav Zachar, that is Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Elazar Savar ki Zachar, that he's a Zachar and he has to act that like a Zachar. Only if he has a homosexual activity like a Zachar would do, that is considered to be problematic and he'll get skila for that. But otherwise he would not get skila if they use the Makom Nikevot. That is the difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Elazar. They both hold that it's Zachar Vadai. Alright, we're gonna stop here actually on the last line of Pei Bet Amud Bet because now the Gemara is going to discuss Rabbi Yossi's opinion because we're going to bring in another factor in Rabbi Yossi. Forget about Safek or Vadai. We have Rabbi Yossi's opinion, which we know from other places, which is that it's a Birya Bifnei Atzma, that the androgynous is a completely new entity, not Zachar, not Nekeva, and therefore we have to reconcile that with our understanding of our Mishnah.